Examples: stories framed around worldviews. There are more worldviews than I can count, but here are a few, together with descriptions of how successful marketers told stories to people with these biases. I believe a home-cooked meal is better for my family. So how can a marketer possibly grow a supermarket brand? There are 20,000 new products introduced to supermarkets every year, struggling for just a few hundred slots on the shelves. The competition spends billions on advertising. Most new products are boring, me-too imitations that aren't worth a second look. It's a brutal marketplace for anyone trying to make a safe, standard, traditional offering. The folks at Banquet decided to tell a story instead. They found an audience with a worldview that matched a product that they had the ability to talk about. It turns out that millions of Americans feel guilty about the fact that they no longer cook dinner for their families. They were raised to believe that a home-cooked meal equals love, equals family, equals healthy, and in our modern world, they can't find the time or the energy to pull it off. A lot of these people own crockpots, the electric slow-cooking device used for making soups and stews. John Hansen of Banquet introduced Crockpot Classics, saying, quote, "Banquet Crockpot Classics contain all of the high-quality ingredients needed for a slow-cooked meal, like tender meats, fresh vegetables, hearty potatoes, and perfectly seasoned sauces, and are ready to cook with less than 5 minutes of preparation. At the end of the day, Banquet Crockpot Classics welcome home families with the inviting aromas of a slow-cooked meal," end quote. In other words, if Banquet had stated the real deal, "Here's a bunch of stuff, preserved by chemicals and freezing. Dump it all in a pot, turn it on, and you'll end up with something we could have just as easily pre-cooked for you and sold frozen, ready for the microwave." Conagra, which markets Banquet, has a home run on its hands. Test market sales were 250% higher than average. This is a high-profit, high-sales item that will succeed for years and years. Of course, Conagra isn't telling the whole truth when it claims that there's no difference between dumping the bag into a crock pot and buying something to go at the local restaurant. Actually, there is a difference because Crock-Pot Classics contain, quote, "thiamine mononitrate, modified food starch, yeast extract, salt, hydrolyzed soy protein, sugar, monosodium glutamate, propylene glycol, caramel color, disodium inosinate, disodium guanylate, soy lecithin, salted California Chablis wine, high fructose corn syrup, anchovies, corn protein, and emulsifier." You know what? It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter because the lie the consumer tells herself is what matters. It's a lie about the way the house smells when her family walks in. A lie about doing the dishes, about not throwing out piles of to-go boxes. It's the way the product makes her feel when she sees her family sit down and eat together. Conagra succeeded because they didn't try to make a product for everyone and because they told a story, not the facts. Next one. I believe shopping for lingerie makes me feel pretty. A good friend is thinking about starting a small lingerie shop aimed at women with high household incomes. Our conversation about the store fit right into this thinking about stories and lies. I imagine that a few years ago, the nascent shopkeeper would have talked about price points and inventory. She'd have worried about monthly cash flow and rental expenses. After that, a discussion of a convenient location would have followed. These are all commodity-focused issues. The old conceit of a retailer was that if you offered the right products at a fair price in a convenient location, you'd do fine if you watched your expenses. Today, the issues are totally different. The world of lingerie is just a click away. Everything, from anywhere in the world, at the best price, is online in just 5 seconds. So if you're going to start a traditional retail outlet, you better have a better reason than filling a need. The issues we discussed about her shop. What's the story? What will people get out of a visit? Who will they meet while they're in the store? Should I serve herbal tea or espresso? I need to have half as much inventory as the standard store. But which half? If someone leaves the store feeling better than when she arrived, my friend has successfully told a story. The consumer will tell herself a lie about how a few ounces of fabric can make her feel sexy, perhaps. And that lie will spread, guaranteeing the store a loyal and profitable following. So growth starts with better questions. Questions about storytelling, not about commodities. Next one. I don't believe marketers. And I read the fine print. There's a huge cohort of consumers that shares the worldview that marketers are lying scum. If you, the marketer, say it, the consumer won't believe it. If you brag about having the best service in town, these people won't believe you. If you claim that you have the best prices or the highest scores in one survey or another, they'll ignore you. Subtlety matters. If you choose to tell a story that's more subtle, something more interesting and more believable, these people will choose to pay attention. Once you've got their attention, there's your chance. If you actually deliver the best service in town, you've given this audience the tools they need to spread your service story. You don't get to just sit down and make up a story and expect that people will believe it merely because you want them to. Consumers are too clever for that. You can't claim your workman's comp insurance agency has the best service and expect that the lie will strike a chord. You can't insist that shopping at your store is fun and expect that people will rush on over just to experience it. This is a hard lesson for a lot of marketers to learn. It's easy to tout your features, focus on your benefits, give proof that you are, in fact, the best solution to a problem. But proof doesn't make the sale. Of course, you believe the proof, but your audience doesn't. The very fact that you presented the proof makes it suspect. If a consumer figures something out or discovers it on her own, she's 1,000 times more likely to believe it than if it's just something you claim. This is where the art of marketing occurs. For most products and services, skywriting, billboards, and telemarketing are precisely the wrong ways to spread a message. Not because they won't be noticed, they probably will, but because they won't be believed. In order to be believed, you must present enough of a change that the consumer chooses to notice it. But then you have to tell a story, not give a lecture. You have to hint at the facts, not announce them. You cannot prove your way into a sale. You gain a customer when the customer proves to herself that you're a good choice. The process of discovery is more powerful than being told the right answer, because, of course, there is no right answer, because even if there were, the consumer wouldn't believe you. Next one. I believe sushi tastes better if the chef is Japanese. Does it change things when you discover that Beck's Light and St. Pauli Girl beer are made on the very same assembly line? Why does the sushi at Masa, $300 a person for dinner, taste so much better than the $40 sushi down the street? Maybe it's the extraordinary wooden bar that gets sanded after every meal, or the attention paid to you by a very talented chef. Exceptions are the engine of our perceptions, and complex stories carry all sorts of perceptions. Where people choose to shop, the way the transaction is handled, the noise, the music.